or you can receive your text message or watch your video. It's the same thing. This is digital code. Oh, I get it. I can deal with this. I've spent a whole career doing this. Oh. And it was like, it might be the biggest epiphany I ever had in my life, because I was just making like 1,000 connections all at once. Like, okay, so this would go to that, this would correspond to that. And all of a sudden, like, I know how to figure this out. I was so excited.
That's Perry Marshall, and this is the All Things Risk Podcast. Welcome and welcome back to another episode of the All Things Risk Podcast. My name is Ben Cattaneo. I'm your host. This is my show. This is where each episode I speak to some fascinating people and I try to bring out valuable and interesting insights through the lenses of risk and uncertainty. Now, off the bat, just some apologies or an apology. I'm getting this episode out a day later than I wanted to. Sorry about that, but here we are. And in teeing up this week's episode, I got to thinking about my conversation last week with Tonya Rekla. And it was an episode that challenged me a little bit, but I think at the end of the day, it was an episode about wonder and possibility. And I got to thinking about things that have been around for millennia. And it's only recently where we started to uncover the benefits. So meditation is a great example where people have been meditating for millennia. And it's only recently that we've had some scientific studies that have brought out the benefits of regular meditation practice. And I think this conversation builds a lot on the theme of wonder and possibility, and it's something that I try to bring into each episode and look at things from less considered lenses. So it builds very nicely on all of that, but the topic at hand and my guest are quite different. This week we get into the science of evolution. It's a discussion that is, once again, and very similar to some of the other talks I've had, very nutrient dense, and you'll hear concepts like symbiogenesis, but not to worry, you don't need to be a biologist to follow along. I'm certainly not. I do think, however, you'll be amazed, intrigued, and even possibly a bit provoked by what you hear. So today I bring you my conversation with Perry Marshall. Perry is actually well known as an online marketing guru. In fact, he wrote a book that many consider to be the definitive guide to Google AdWords. He's an engineer. However, he didn't join me to talk about any of that. Although, as you'll hear, there's a strong connection between the internet and internet algorithms and how Perry thinks and has looked at how evolution works. Perry is well known for his book entitled Evolution 2.0, Breaking the Deadlock Between Darwin and Design. And this is a book that's all about looking at evolution in a new way. The way that Perry describes it, it's a way of looking at evolution that's different from what people who believe in intelligent design think, as well as what neo-Darwinists think. And I don't know about you, I classify myself as an atheist agnostic. And whether you are that, whether you're an atheist, whether you're religious or perhaps not religious but spiritual, I think you'll find this conversation fascinating. In fact, I think regardless of where you're coming from religiously, perhaps with the exception of if you believe that evolution is not true and the Earth was created some 6,000 years ago or whatever, that's the only way that you won't find this conversation intriguing and interesting. Otherwise, I think you're going to get a lot out of it. There's a lot of science, but I think it is a topic that is looked at, or that Perry looks at it from different lenses, and that's always valuable. We get into Perry's background story and how he got writing a book about evolution, and it's something that he didn't think would happen because he's a pastor's child and he grew up as a devout Christian. And we hear about how he got himself unstuck in his research on evolution. We talk about randomness in evolution, and this is very interesting with regard to risk, because my understanding of how evolution always worked was that there are a number of random occurrences in genes, and the ones that lead to stronger adaptations are the ones that survive, and those species continue to propagate. And when Perry looked at it, he describes it in a different way, and it challenges that very notion. And I think you'll find that very, very interesting. And that gets into a lot of things that we're hearing about that are similarly fascinating and might open up an interesting world with regard to science. Things like how germs replicate, the microbiome, we talk about all of that stuff. We get into CRISPR and transhumanism, so gene editing. We've talked about that previously on other episodes. So Perry brings some interesting perspectives into all of that. Bacteria, and tons more. So without any further delay, I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Here's Perry Marshall. So Perry, welcome to the All Things Risk Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Ben, welcome. We've already been conversing. It's going to be a great conversation, and everybody's going to peek into some little worlds that they probably never saw before.
It's very good. And I want to get into this whole evolution 2.0 piece and your work there, which sounds fascinating, although it sounds a little bit kind of overwhelming at times when I've heard you speak about it, talk about codes and symbiotic merger and all of this stuff that I don't quite understand, but we can get into it. But before we do, I just wanted to understand a little bit about your background, and because you have this whole world of online marketing. You're kind of an online marketing guru, and then you're into, you know, you've wrote a book about evolution, and so that seems very interesting to me that you have these disparate, you know, seemingly disparate worlds that you've played in. So a little bit of background here.
All these worlds is they actually fit together very neatly. Mm-hmm. They just probably, from the outside, you know, it looks like a duck-billed platypus, I'm sure. And so, yeah, people know me as the guy who wrote the world's best-selling book on online advertising, mm-hmm. which is The Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords. So when Google's advertising system came out in 2002, I quickly latched onto that, and one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I was speaking at seminars and writing books, and lo and behold, I was in the teaching people Google AdWords business, which I couldn't have really imagined a year before, you know. And so I have a whole, I do conferences and seminars, and I take equity in companies, and I do all kinds of interesting things like that. And so people know me for that world. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was an electrical engineer who got laid off from his job and ended up having to make it in sales. Mm. You know, and then all of a sudden I'm writing an evolution book, and actually the evolution book ties together the advertising and the and the electrical engineering in a really interesting way, because what Google AdWords really is it's a place where you can perform extremely high-speed evolutionary experiments. Hmm. And if you do a good job at them, you make a lot of money. And in fact, I'm not sure there's any other industry that does more evolutionary experiments faster than the paid search advertising industry. And so this actually, like, when I connected a dot, when I kind of went down this rabbit hole, oh, you know, what about this whole evolution thing? I suddenly realized, Perry, this is what you've already been doing for a living. It's just biology instead of people's computer screens.
Hmm.
But it's actually all of the same principles. And in fact, you know, the computers run on the principles that you wrote about in your Ethernet book back when you were living that life. So it all flows together very neatly, and it's all running on the exact same set of principles, and which is why the biology work actually has fed back tremendously into my business consulting. Like, every week I am having conversations with customers and clients about, well, what would a symbiotic relationship look like? And so the analogies are actually extremely useful. And if you don't understand one field, you can quickly understand the other, because the whole world operates on a common set of principles. And so, I hope people can go away feeling like, my goodness, I actually know more about the world than I even thought I did just by connecting some dots.
That's true. How did you get into Google AdWords in the first place?
So I hung out my shingle in 2001. In fact, I quit my job a month and a day after 9/11. Mm. The company was being sold, and I went out on my own, and I started a consulting company. And, well, I needed leads. So I had some clients, and I was paying the bills, but I knew, dude, you know, like, you gotta get some flow. You gotta get people coming and knocking on your door and finding out what you do. And so I was mailing out this CD called Guerrilla Marketing for High-Tech Salespeople, and I needed names. I needed people to fill in that form on my website. And right about then, Google introduced their AdWords system where you could, you know, you could drop $5 in the slot and your ads would start running, and you could bid on any keyword and you could send them to any page on your website. And all of a sudden I've got people filling out my form and I'm generating leads, and eventually it was making money. Look, this is what every business needs. Every website needs traffic, and every business needs visitors. And it turns out, well, yeah, this is like crack cocaine, man. Like, this is like selling bread and water in the desert. People absolutely need this, and you have to figure this stuff out, or you're going to go nowhere in a web-based business, or really most any business now. And so I just needed to eat. And,
right.
But what I discovered was just the most amazing marketing machine I'd ever seen in my life. Because, I mean, AdWords is really an unbelievable invention.
Yeah. I was going to ask, like, what you know, that necessity is the mother of all invention. And, clearly you kind of had a sink or swim situation going on, but clearly it worked out well.
Three kids and a mortgage, man.
Right. I suppose that focuses the mind. What's the evolutionary angle to AdWords? You alluded to that, but I wanted to understand that a little bit better. For my listeners, who I'm sure they're my listeners, understand AdWords more than or better than I do. It'd be interesting to talk a little about that, then we can get into evolution 2.0.
So in Google AdWords, AdWords is the sponsored listings that you see at the top of the page when you search for a plumber, you search for red shoes, or almost anything you could buy. Generally, the first four positions on Google are paid advertising positions, and then the free ones are below that. And so companies can bid on a keyword. So a plumber can bid on a word like plumber or overflowing toilet and say, well, so this is the keyword I'm bidding on. I'm willing to pay 50 cents a click or $5 a click or $50 a click. The range is all over the place. And the market kind of decides, you know, how much people are willing to pay. It's an auction. And when people click on the ad, then the advertiser gets charged, and somebody comes to your website And then if you're a plumber, you either get the person to call you or not, and you get business from it. So this is a $80 billion a year business now. Mm-hmm. And it's huge. And now, how do you succeed in Google AdWords? Well, the AdWords 101 answer is you don't write one ad, you write two or three or four different ads, and you run them all at the same time, and Google will rotate them, and they'll flip back and forth between A or B or C or D, and each one will get a different click-through rate.
Right.
So one ad might get 6% of the people to click, and one ad might get 3%, one ad might get 2%, one ad might get 7%, and if you do the math, you know, the one that gets 7% is 3.5 times more bang for your buck than the one that got 2%. Okay. And so the question is, if you're a plumber, how much does it cost in clicks for your phone to ring? You know, maybe it costs $25 to get a phone call, or maybe it costs $100 to get a phone call, or whatever it is. Well, you do this by testing your ads and testing your landing pages. And so there's a whole world of Google Analytics. And so what you have is the three pillars of evolution, which is replication. So you post that ad, and all of a sudden, almost instantly, it could be shown on thousands of computer screens all over your town or all over the world. Okay, so the ad is being copied, just kind of like cells get copied, right? Mm-hmm. Bacteria make copies of themselves, right? Mm-hmm. You have variation, which is you're making different versions of an ad. Mm-hmm. We're going to try 50% off. We're going to try 2-for-1. We're going to try half price. We're going to try all these different ways of saying things. We're going to try all these different offers, right? And then you have selection, which is, well, who clicks on it? Now, the first stage of selection is just Google's own, you know, internal workings, maybe giving a preference of one thing over the other, but the real selection is done by the consumers. And the thing is, you don't know what people are going to want. You think you do, but in reality, you never. It's just like all the surprises you've encountered running this podcast. Mm. Like, you got done with some show, and you're like, that was awesome, and your listeners were like, what was that? And then you do some other show, and you thought, man, that was a terrible show, and everybody's writing in and you're telling you how awesome it was, right? And so none of us really know what's going to succeed. What I'm describing is before I started in the evolution book or writing any of that or even becoming interested in it, what I started doing was I started teaching people to artificially accelerate evolution on Google AdWords by deliberately testing more and more things, stacking the deck in their own favor, letting audiences vote, using AdWords to come up with book titles or names of seminars or names of products, or using the pictures to, like, oh, we should use red, we should use blue, like letting the marketplace to vote on all of these kinds of business decisions.
And getting feedback and then adjusting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you said it. Feedback and adjusting. Feedback and adjusting. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so in any business context in advertising, you have to pay exquisite attention to all these little signals that the market is telling you, and you have to make decisions on those signals long before the market decides, like, thumbs up or thumbs down, you live or you die.
Right.
You have to be way ahead of that curve.
And I found that
same is true in biological evolution, which we will get to.
And that kind of blows people away. I will get into that. But it's a way of, because this is a show about risk and uncertainty, so it's a way of managing uncertainty, because in, you know, a risk is when you have an understanding of what the probabilities are, right? You know, deck of cards, you know, probability of getting, you know, an ace is 1 in 4. not one in four, but with four out of 52, probability of, you know, whatever, that's a risk, you know, the probabilities. But an uncertainty is when you don't know what the probabilities are, but you can kind of take little experiments to get closer to that level of understanding of what the, you know, what the distribution might be, what the probability might be. You may never know, you may make some false assumptions, but it's a way of managing uncertainty. So we'll get into this in evolution, but it's not a purely random environment. It's not just, what they call, a Brownian motion where you have, particles just going all over the place in a purely random pattern. But
you're exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you're using very precise language, and this is, it's very, I mean, really important that, so you make a living in the risk management world, and so you have a whole vocabulary for these different distinctions.
Sure.
Now, most people don't have that vocabulary, and so most people will assume that things are random that aren't.
Yeah.
Right? Just because they're unpredictable doesn't mean that they're random. There's whole other vocabularies for that. So these become very important. And in a career, if you're making your living on this stuff, this is life and death. This is bankruptcy. Are you going to get a vacation house?
And you can have the opposite, right? You can have a situation where, you know, you pull through something or, you know, a fund manager makes a lot of money and they think, well, I'm a shit hot, you know, fund manager, but actually just got really lucky, you know,
That's right.
It's important to understand, you know, the whether or not you've been lucky or good.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay, so I mean that kind of makes sense. You know, you take little experiments, you get feedback, you adjust, and you get better at what how to master, you know, Google AdWords. So I think I get that, and I think most of my listeners will get that. So where did the inspiration come to write this book about evolution? How did that transpire?
Well, it happened because I went to China to visit my brother. My brother had moved there 4 years earlier. Mm-hmm. He had finished a seminary degree. He had a master's degree in theology, and he moved to China where he was teaching English and he was doing missionary work on the side. Mm-hmm. And in 4 years, he had gone from card-carrying, right-wing, conservative Christian to almost atheist. Mm-hmm. Which was a real shocker.
Right.
Like, oh my goodness.
Right.
Now this happened over a period of time, and like we would exchange all these emails and he had all these questions. He's extremely smart, and you know, we were both pastors' kids and mm-hmm. you know, so we had this common, you know, family religious heritage and everything, and then all of a sudden Brian is just throwing this whole thing out the window. Hmm. And so one afternoon we're riding in this Chinese bus going up a mountain somewhere, and we're having this another argument about all of this. And like, he is really smart, and he knows where the bones are buried. Like, you haven't had a religious argument till you had one with a guy with a master's degree in theology.
Mm.
And he's pushing all my buttons, and I'm kind of getting flustered, and finally I go, Brian, come on. I go, look at the hand at the end of your arm. I said, this is a nice piece of engineering. And I've been doing engineering for a long time. Mm-hmm. I said, you don't think this is an accumulation of random accidents, do you? There's that word, random, mm-hmm. right? And he goes, hold on, buddy, hold on. And now he's got this whole answer for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, man, like invasion of the body snatchers. Like they got him. Like,
right.
Oh, my word. Okay, well, I listened to his answer. Well, here's what he said. Here's exactly what he said. He goes, listen, Gary. He says, let's say there's like a billion falcons flying around for 100 million years.
Hmm.
He goes, that's a lot of falcons. He goes, don't you think that every now and then there's going to be a DNA copying error, and it's actually going to make the vision better instead of worse, and now you got better falcons, and then they're going to split through the population, and it's going to get better. He goes, it's inevitable that you're going to get this constant improvement And he goes, you don't need any designer, and like all the biologists know this. And so, Perry, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, I listen to that, and I'm like, well, maybe he's right. I don't know. Like, as an engineer, it sure doesn't seem like he's right, but I don't know. Maybe the biologists know something that we engineers don't know. Mm-hmm. And I knew he was right. I knew the biologists would probably be more agreeing with him. Mm-hmm. And so I made this weird decision right there. I was like, okay, I'm not going to get anywhere arguing with them because I don't actually know. Mm-hmm. I'm not even confident enough to try to argue with them. So you know what? I'm going to find out. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I got a bunch of questions. I got all the same questions he's got, frankly. Mm. Like, he's only a couple steps ahead of me. He's almost dragging me with him. I don't know, maybe he's right. Maybe all this religion stuff is just some kind of fairy tale. I don't know. I'm going to find out. When I get home, I'm going to buy a bunch of books, and I'm going to dig into this, and I'm going to find out. Like, I don't know, maybe the Falcons got better eyes by copying errors. I don't know.
Right.
Let's find out. So I did. Well, I had no idea what I discovered. I mean, I couldn't even imagine, frankly. I didn't know what I didn't know. And but I'll tell you this, it was really scary. Mm. Because I had this way that I thought that the world was. And I was kind of comfortable with it. Mm. Brian had busted out of it. He believed differently now. Mm. He had all the set of reasons. He wasn't an idiot. And like, maybe he's right. And I don't know, maybe next Thanksgiving we're all going to sit around at the table and like, Brian and I will be the two atheists at the table, and everybody will be praying to the paint on the ceiling, and they think it's God, and we know better. Mm. And like, Perry, do you want to pray? No, why don't you pray? You know, and like all of these, you know, what about my kids? You know, I take my kids to Sunday school. What if Dad's taking kids to Sunday school? He doesn't really buy this anymore. And what, my wife's not probably going to like this. And like all of this stuff is just swirling around in my head, and it's really ambiguous. And I really decided, I said, dude, you've got an electrical engineering degree. You're scientifically literate. You know how to read a scientific paper. Figure it out. Mm. So that's what I did.
Most people don't do that. Most people, tuck away that, that sort of cognitive dissonance and don't explore it. So,
And they're miserable.
Yeah, and a book came out at the other end for you. So, why don't we get into some of the things that you found? And first of all, so just so that you know who you're talking to, I consider myself an agnostic, an atheist agnostic, right? So I'm not religious. I certainly don't believe that the Bible was, you know, necessarily the word of God. It was written by humans, and there's lots of history around it. But I'm not one of these hardcore, you know, atheists. I'm in a place where, well, I'm agnostic. You know, I'm open to different possibilities, but I just haven't seen any evidence. Not that I think a huge amount about this on a daily basis either, to be honest. But you know, I'm not a, you know, a kind of hardcore Richard Dawkins fanboy. I think, you know, my understanding of evolution comes from what you would call the kind of the neo-Darwinian type of understanding of how it works, but I haven't looked into it the way that you have, and you've looked into it, and you've come up and have said things like, well, the stuff that, whether it's Richard Dawkins or Bill Nye, they're kind of 30 years out of date in terms of their understanding of evolution. Yeah. So maybe if you just walk us through that with trying to keep it, so that we can understand. I know you've dove into some really heavy scientific literature, but just so that we understand what it is you found.
Well, so let me go back to when I was 14. I grew up in a super conservative mm-hmm. church, and And this guy came and he gave a whole week of lectures, and his name was John Whitcomb, and I got a whole entire week of what they call flood geology, which is the Earth is 6,000 years old, and all of the features of the Earth are from this massive worldwide flood, and you know, you have to take the Bible like extremely literally, and and I thought it was great, like oh man, this is awesome. Like, I'm a science geek anyways. This is, you know, I'm on turbo. This is great. But, and there wasn't any one thing, but, you know, by the time I was in college, I realized that there seems to be a lot of problems with this. Like, which is an understatement, actually, you know, like, well, the speed of light, that's kind of a problem. And all the geological layers, you know, there's a problem. Well, there wasn't any confrontation, but later I heard this presentation by a guy named Hugh Ross, and he's explaining the Big Bang, and he was an astrophysicist, and he's describing, you know, the first moment of the Big Bang and then the different stages and the expansion and all of this, and he's describing how fine-tuned the universe is, and he was also explaining, hey, you know, if you take the book of Genesis a little bit less literally, like not completely figuratively, but if you just kind of make change a couple assumptions, it's actually fine. And the important thing to notice here is that the universe is incredibly fine-tuned. If you mess with any of those constants, it wouldn't work at all. You know, and so we live in this amazing cosmos, and all of a sudden, like, oh, okay, the universe is 13 billion years old. I don't have to be wedded to that old, you know, way of thinking. And so it was fine. And it was like, okay, so, and I guess what I learned from that is, you know what, if you're open to new information, you can change and you'll almost always have to adjust something, but it's not the end of the world, you know? And so, you know, I had several of those kinds of changes of thinking. And so, so I get into the, this evolution thing, and I was lost for a while. I mean, I was just lost. Oh my goodness, this is so friggin' complicated. Like it's just endless. And I buy all these stacks of books, books from the left, books from the right, books in the middle, you know. And it was just like watching the ping pong go back and forth. And I was like, I have to find some way that my feet can touch the bottom of the swimming pool, because this is too confusing. And I didn't know where the bottom was. Like, where is it? Well, one day I suddenly bumped into the bottom of the swimming pool, and here's what it was. And again, I'm in this no man's land where I'm not sure, am I going to end up being an atheist or what? And all of a sudden, so I'm trying to understand, okay, genetic mutations could cause evolution. How does that work? What's a gene? What's DNA? And I'm studying about the genetic code, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I've seen this before. Wait a minute. I've seen this before. Oh, my goodness. I know what this is. And here's what it was. So in 2002, I wrote a book called Industrial Ethernet for the International Society of Automation, which is the largest process control engineers professional society, guys that run factories, basically. And it was in a previous life, and I worked at this networking company, and so I wrote this book. And I'm studying genes, and I'm like, oh my goodness, the way that DNA gets read and the RNA gets translated and into amino acids, in the way that is all unpacked and unfolded and read and decoded is exactly like what goes on in a wireless router. It's almost exactly the same. It's basically ones and zeros where, okay, you got to strip these off over here, you got to strip these off over here, translate this into this other thing, and then, you know, do some more manipulation, and all of a sudden you have the thing that you need, and you can read your email, or you can receive your text message or watch your video. It's the same thing. This is digital code. Oh, I get it. I can deal with this. I've spent a whole career doing this. Oh. Right. And it was like, it might be the biggest epiphany I ever had in my life, because I was just making like 1,000 connections all at once. Like, okay, so this would go to that. This would correspond to that. And all of a sudden, like, I know how to figure this out. I was so excited. And so I started digging in. Well, this immediately told me something very important, like super important. So, okay, you and I are on Skype, and there's all these packets going back and forth across the internet, and of course they're colliding with stuff, and it's speeding up and it's slowing down, and somebody runs an arc welder, or there's some lightning somewhere, and there's all these things that can interfere, but if we have a good connection, we don't hear any of that. It all gets dealt with. Well, here's the thing. Digital data is exquisitely fragile. Like, it is more fragile than your grandmother's bone china. In fact, you could corrupt one bit in a huge packet of information, and you have to trash the whole thing. Okay, it's exquisitely fragile. Okay, and all of everything between you and me, I bet there's 15 layers of error correction and error detection to make sure that the signal is clean. Okay, and sometimes it fails and you drop a phone call. But I mean, and it's really clever. Okay, and I'm like, okay, gene, and then I start looking at birth defects. What happens if you corrupt a gene? What happens if you corrupt DNA? Well, it only takes one letter. So you get a billion letters in your DNA, more than that, actually. One letter corrupted in the wrong place could give you cystic fibrosis. One letter out of a billion. Okay? And I said, okay, that falcon isn't getting better from copying errors. There's no way. I know this. There's no possible way that that's what's going on. Okay? Now, most people would have just become a creationist at that point, and that would be the end of it. In fact, you'll find there's a lot of engineers who are creationists or intelligent design guys, because they get to exactly what I just told you, and they stop, and they go, there's no way evolution is true.
Right. So they basically say someone's coding.
Right.
God is coding.
And, and they're not saying that out of ignorance. I really have to cut them some slack. They're saying it based on their professions and what they know and what they do. This does not happen by accident. This never happens by accident. And I knew that all too well from working in an industrial software company. So most people would have stopped there, but for some other reasons we don't have time to go into, I had been really paying attention for a long time to certain things, and I had seen a lot of, let's call it, anecdotal evidence that evolution was true. Okay. I already had a lot of background information. Like, for example, I went to this whale museum. And if you look at a whale skeleton, if it's completely assembled, you'll see that near the back, there are these little legs or flipper bones tucked inside the body. And they're not doing anything, but they're just floating there inside the whale.
Right.
And they have every appearance of, once upon a time, those were legs and they were a lot bigger. They're just shrunken down.
Sure.
Okay, and so, like, it really looks like a whale used to be a four-footed creature, but it evolved, and I was like, there was a bunch of little things like that. I'm like, I can't dismiss evolution. So I actually sat literally for a couple years with this dichotomy. I'm like, it looks like evolution is true, but the way they're explaining it cannot possibly be correct because of what I know about digital code.
Okay.
There's no way.
Okay.
So what do I do? And so I'm not even sure quite why I managed to keep an open mind, but I decided to keep an open mind.
And just before we go on, just the way that they're explaining it, in my understanding, is that there it goes back to your analogy that it's just random. So in a Nassim Taleb, who wrote The Black Swan, he has in one of his books, can't remember which one, but he says, if you have an infinite number of monkeys, there will be one monkey that produces, you know, the complete works of Shakespeare. Like if you have an infinite number of monkeys that can type, right, randomly, you'll have one that produces the complete works of Shakespeare.
So let me step in. If Taleb released, I respect Taleb, but if he said that, he's wrong.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Like that, the infinite monkey theorem is wrong.
Yeah.
But you have the right idea, right? A lot of people think.
Yeah, but that's how my understanding of how people think that that evolution works, right? That there's this randomness,
correct,
and then the things that don't kill the, you know, whatever the species, they make it survive and they propagate and they can continue. That's my very rudimentary understanding of how it works. I am not an evolutionary scientist.
Well, and you'll find a lot of books by like Richard Dawkins and Jerry Coyne, like the kind of famous evolution books. Mm-hmm. Most of them say, you just have these random mutations in genes and they're copying errors and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. There's no purpose behind them, and it just happens by accident. But natural selection makes the best of it. It just gets better and better.
Yeah.
That is not true. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's flat out wrong. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would argue it's the biggest mistake in the history of science.
Okay.
Lots of people think it's true. As a communication engineer, I can promise you it's not. Now there's a punchline coming. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this was where like my head just exploded, because I was sitting there going, it looks like evolution is true, but their explanation does not make sense. I know it's wrong. So what's the truth? Well, one day somebody sent me this paper and he goes, Perry, I think you'll find this really interesting. And it was by a geneticist named James Shapiro. He's at the University of Chicago, very distinguished career, and he was explaining the error correction systems of cells.
Hmm.
Okay, which I'm going, oh my goodness, yes, you have to have those. I knew they had to be in there. Yes, they were. In fact, like every time a cell copies, the first pass gets you one error in 10,000. Then the next stage of correction gets you to one in 10,000.
Right.
The next stage gets you to 1 in 10 billion.
Right.
And this is how you get accurately copied cells.
Hmm.
So I'm like, yes, I knew that had to be true. And then, because it's in our Skype conversation, right? It's why we can talk. Hmm. Okay? Well, but then he said something really interesting. He told about this experiment in 1944 where Barbara McClintock damaged DNA of corn plants with radiation.
Hmm.
And the corn plant repaired the damage by copying other pieces of code from other parts of DNA and fixed it.
Wow.
It patched the code. It was like literally like, oh, this code is missing. What can we do here? It goes and it combines some other pieces of code. It pastes them in place. And it was able to successfully reproduce, and she figured out exactly what had happened through a very meticulous process, and she presented it at a symposium in 1951.
Hmm.
And they all thought she was crazy.
Hmm.
They half of them were angry, and the other ones were just like laughing. Like, who do you think you are, woman? Like, plants don't re-engineer their own genetics. Don't you know this? Well, she could not get them to buy what she was saying. And she went underground for about 20 years, and she barely published any of her research. But she won the Nobel Prize in 1983.
Wow.
And what she discovered was transposition, which is there's entire, so you know how I said like an Ethernet packet will have these different regions, like this part does this and this part does this other thing. Well, there's entire categories of coding sequences in our DNA that move around. And when they move around, they change the expressions of the genes. And so the moving of these transposons reprograms the DNA in real time. And so, yeah, it's like having certain kinds of code in a computer program where you move those lines around and all of a sudden the relationships between all the subroutines change. And all of a sudden the program can do something that it didn't do before.
Right. So the cells are doing something very similar to what you described by way of the AdWords piece, right?
Exactly. So you write Google AdWords ad, you're like, let's try this. Mm-hmm. Let's try that. Let's try this. Let's try that. You don't know what's actually going to work. You mm-hmm. just don't. Mm-hmm. But you make educated guesses. Mm-hmm. Now, what you don't do, you don't sit there and bang your elbow on the keyboard and go, oh, you know, let's just like put some random gibberish in there. Maybe that will work.
Yeah.
And cells don't do that either. These are highly ordered, highly structured rearrangements of data. And we actually barely understand what they're doing.
Right.
It's like we are slowly piecing together how this genetic language works and how it's manipulated.
Right.
It is absolutely amazing.
So what basically it sounds to me what Barbara McClintock was saying was that there is an intelligence that is existing at a cellular level that we don't quite understand.
Yes. Yet. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the word intelligence is kind of loaded and it scares people. A word that is more comfortable to a lot of people is cognition.
Mm-hmm.
But by any dictionary definition of cognition, cells are cognitive and they respond to what's going on. So there's hundreds of inputs from the environment that are shaping what goes on. And so I was just like, why hasn't anybody told me this? Like, this woman got a Nobel Prize in 1983. I never heard of this. What's going on?
What is going on?
Well, I give you my interpretation of what's going on. I've had a lot of conversations with people about this. So I think this is actually where me being a marketing consultant gives me some insight because I know how human beings are.
Okay.
So humans, first of all, humans always prefer a simple explanation to a complex one.
Sure.
Okay. So, that's one thing. Secondly, this whole topic is like, it gives half the people in the world, it like gives them a post-traumatic stress disorder reaction, just bringing it up. Like if we're talking about God, science and evolution, where we came from, people have these very primal knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, religion and politics, right? These are things that, tribalism, I like to call it, which, is often not a good thing, but.
Right. So that's kind of like that first, that's like just the basic human element. And then politically, what we have is we have this war between the religious right and the atheist left. Okay, so the atheist left made Charles Darwin their patron saint, and evolution is our escape hatch away from religion, okay? And the way they tell the story, evolution is random and purposeless, and it's just random copying errors, and there is no purpose to it or anything like that. Well, Barbara McClintock emphatically showed that it's not that way. It's actually very purposeful and very responsive and very contextual. Evolution never actually works when it's just purely random and accidental. And you could prove that with Google ads. Mm-hmm. Try writing random Google ads and see if it'll work. Like, good luck. Okay.
Right.
On the other side of the spectrum is you have you know, the young earth creationists in particular who are like, evolution is a sin. It's a hoax. Okay, so you've got one side that gives you this really oversimplified explanation. Like a Richard Dawkins book is actually like a Homer Simpson version of evolution. Now, I realize it probably insulted a bunch of people, but I'm completely serious.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's at least 30, if not 50 years out of date. It's ridiculously oversimplified. And it doesn't really work the way he tells you it does.
Okay.
Okay. On the other hand, the creationist is like, no, it's a hoax. And, you know, it never happened. And all those things, you know, whatever story they want to make up about the dinosaur bones, like, no. Evolution is true, and it is absolutely the most amazing thing that you have ever seen in your life. In fact, it's so amazing. Cells, most people have never even stopped to consider that the cells of their own body might be smarter than we are.
There's, and I don't know if this is going off on a tangent, but there's this work that I don't know if you've been following around the microbiome.
Yes.
Yeah. That says, you know, we have these bacteria in our gut, and they could drive a lot of our decision making.
Yes.
Particularly around what we eat. But yeah.
So let's talk about this, because this is a huge piece of the puzzle. I bet I could have just as well talked about this as talk about Barbara McClintock. So 90% of the cells in your body and my body are not you or me. They're symbiotic bacteria. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're much smaller than animal cells, so that's why there's so many of them.
Right.
But they live on our skin,
right.
And they you know, they're in our you know, our tracts and our orifices and in our stomach, and they're doing all of this stuff. Well, so let me tell you about the story about symbiotic life. So I'm looking out my window, and there's a tree out there, and there's grass, and there's all this green stuff. When you look out your window, every green thing that you see is green because of a chloroplast. Like, everybody learns that in high school biology. But what most people don't know is a chloroplast is really a blue-green algae that is living inside a plant cell. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's an algae. It has its own DNA. It reproduces independently. And it's like a merger acquisition. It's like a Starbucks inside a Marriott hotel.
Okay.
So, you know, think about the Starbucks and the Marriott. Like, well, the Starbucks makes the Marriott better. And the Marriott makes a great place for, you know, it's great for both parties.
Right.
Well, an algae turns sunlight and carbon dioxide into energy. The algae gives the energy to the plant, and the plant gives it a safe place to live.
Right. Okay, got it.
This is called symbiogenesis. And or in a human cell, most people have heard the term mitochondria, but they don't really know what they are.
Right.
Mitochondria are bacteria that live inside your cells, and they turn oxygen into energy. That's what they are.
Yeah.
They have their own DNA. They're just like the algae do in a chloroplast. They have their own DNA. They reproduce independently. That there is a very, very tight cooperation between the cells. Like, we only need six of you guys, okay? So just six, please. You know, it's kind of like that, and it makes us possible to consume oxygen, and so evolutionary history is full of these mergers, and the mergers are exquisitely complex, and the mergers are also sort of a 1 + 1 = 10. It's not even 1 + 1 = 3. Lichen is algae plus fungus. And lichen can live in places where neither algae nor fungus can live. And I read this old book from 1924, because this is how long the science has been known.
Really?
Lichen when you put the algae and fungus together as lichen, it produces, I believe, 200 kinds of chemicals that neither algae nor fungus produces by itself. 200.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. And so
quite the opposite from business merger and acquisitions, because those tend to be value sapping. but anyway, I digress.
Well, look,
although they're sold to us as exactly what you're describing, right?
Well, a really good merger acquisition would produce a whole bunch of new things.
Yeah.
Right? And occasionally it does, right? Yeah. Occasionally there's a really smart one and it's just really great for everybody. And so like this just gives you a little bit of a picture of what's really going on with evolution. And no, like a bacterium can do more programming in 12 minutes than a team of Google engineers can do in 12 weeks. And we don't know how it knows how to do that. Mm. I mean, we just don't. I mean, I think it's possible to find out.
Yeah.
But like life is so much more amazing than the creationists or the Darwinists ever told you. Mm. And I had to write this book. I mean, I was about 5 years into learning this and I'm like, I have to write a book about this. Nobody is talking about this. Like everybody should know how amazing the cells in their body actually are. Mm. And like a lot of times evolution is painted as this purposeless, nihilistic kind of, you know, heat death of the universe sort
of,
you know, thing. No, like every cell on earth is purposeful and way more cooperative. Like also all that symbiogenesis, it's cooperation.
Mm-hmm. What you describe also reminds me of something that I listened to was a Radiolab. I don't know if you come across this, a Radiolab episode, and they talk about the roots of trees talking to one another.
Yes.
Have you come across that?
Yes. And so like there's a, on my website, cosmicfingerprints.com, you'll find one of those. If you search trees, I think you'll find it.
Okay.
There's a TED talk by Bonnie Basler called How Bacteria Talk, which is just mind blowing. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And where does this all go? So you have some thoughts. I read the one post that you had about, I think you entitled it Recess is Over. and you talk about, you know, the sort of the neo-Darwinian views of evolution are, you know, they're, as you say, 30 years out of date. But what's coming? You know, if we're getting to understand this stuff, where is science heading, do you think?
Well, two things is I really am finding that more and more people are talking about this, and there's a reason why we really have to. This isn't just for purely philosophical reasons. First off, if you don't understand how smart nature is, you'll never treat disease and cancer properly.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was talking to a lady that does cancer trials 2 weeks ago, and she just said, you know, those cancer cells are so smart, you do stuff to them, and you don't know what they're going to do back. Okay?
Right. Right.
So this is really important, but here's another one that's even more, this is a little scary.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of CRISPR?
Yes.
It's gene editing.
It is, yep.
Right? So we can edit, you know, genes and do like almost anything we want. Well, so there's a Jennifer Doudna is author of this book called A Crack in Creation, and she's one of the pioneers of CRISPR. And she says something on maybe page 4 of her book that just chills up my spine. Mm. She said, "We know that evolution happens through random mutation and natural selection, and now with CRISPR, we can intelligently guide it for the first time." And I read that, I'm like, no.
Right.
Okay. Right. It's the whole process that got you to the way we are now. Yes, there's errors and yes, there's birth defects. I know that. But the process in general has this enormous amount of cognition, and the bacteria are actually smarter than we are. And if we think we're smarter than nature, we are in for a rude awakening.
It's really dangerous.
Oh, please. You're a risk guy. You get this.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one of the things that I'm really concerned about, and it isn't terrorism, and but what it is antibiotic resistance. You know, our doctors, they just prescribe antibiotics like candy. Sometimes it appears, you know, and that's just not good. You know, we need to get our hands around this. It's because you don't, as you say, you know, if bacteria really do operate in this way, then they're mutating far, far faster than we can create antibiotics to combat the various infections that they might create.
Well, that's right. And so, see, these issues are really of pressing practical medical and health importance. They're not just angels dancing on the head of a pin or anything like that. They affect everybody. You know, what happens if somebody comes up with some CRISPR thing and it goes crazy and kills 200,000 people?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. In the effort of, like, you know, creating the designer baby, right?
Right. Or killing mosquitoes or whatever it is. Like, there's all these noble goals, but then there's unintended consequences. Please be careful.
Right.
So, yeah. So that all this stuff is in my book, Evolution 2.0, and I just really hope I hope that you'll realize, like, okay, life is not a happy chemical accident. It's intensely purposeful. I don't think there's any contradiction between religious views and evolution at all, because everything on Earth is purposeful. And there doesn't need to be a war between science and religion. I think religion raises lots of ethical issues that science can't answer. Like, science can tell you, how to keep somebody alive or how to kill them, but it doesn't tell you whether you should do one or the other, because science doesn't answer questions like that. And so we really have to be sensitive about these things.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast, Perry, that we could spend a huge amount of time on. But I know that you have to get moving. So, I'd love to have you back, particularly to talk about some of these things in perhaps a little bit more in a little bit more detail.
I'd be happy to do it. I'm very passionate about this.
Oh, great. No, that sounds interesting. And, you know, but before we go, first of all, were there any other things that you didn't get to talk about that you wanted to? And then finally, how can people find you on the internet?
Well, I'll just quickly mention that I put together a technology prize for how do you get from chemicals to code? Where does the first information come from? And it's $3 million. And if you go to naturalcode.org, you can see the details about it. And the book, Evolution 2.0, Breaking the Deadlock Between Darwin and Design, is on Amazon. You can get it in Kindle, hardcover, Audible, and it'll be out in softcover pretty soon. So whichever version you like, but if this piqued your interest, there's just a lot more to discover.
Very cool. Very cool. And, so you're on Twitter and, you've got a couple of websites, but one, in particular
So cosmicfingerprints.com, is the Evolution 2.0 website, and you can get three free chapters of the book, and there's a Facebook page for Evolution 2.0, and you can follow that. Those are probably the two best places to follow it. If you get on the Evolution 2.0 email list, we'll keep you updated, and we'll always put interesting stories and things in your inbox.
And there's also lots of stuff on online marketing as well.
PerryMarshall.com. That's a whole other universe.
Very good. Perry, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And, best of luck. But let's also stay in touch. I'd love to have you back.
Ben, thanks for having me on. It was a real honor and a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Check out Perry and Evolution 2.0. The links are in the show notes as always. Now, I am not a biologist or an evolutionary scientist, but some of you might be, or you might have some thoughts on what you heard, or you may even have a potential guest that might have some interesting views on what Perry said. If so, let me know. allthingsrisk@gmail.com is the best place to do that. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the show, please do so. allthingsrisk.co.uk is the best place to find the right platform for you to get this show into your earbuds each and every week. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and a bunch of other places. allthingsrisk.co.uk or allthingsrisk.com will set you up. That's it, folks, for this week. We will be back in 2 weeks' time. In the interim, and as always, don't forget, risk is life.